Iowa Public Radio is fundraising right now, and we could really use your support. The pace of news will not let up, and neither will we. Show your support for this service when you donate now at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Healthcare workers have been on the front lines of this pandemic, we know. This hour, we'll hear from four Iowans working in healthcare. From one, serving our seniors, from another, our migrant populations, also from the CEO of a hospital in Decatur County in south central Iowa. We'll get a sense of their experiences from the past year, their current challenges, and their hopes for 2021. But let's start off in our state capital with Dr. Ravi Vamiri. He is Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center's Chief Infection Prevention Officer. He specializes in infectious disease and has been at Mercy One in Des Moines for more than 25 years. Dr. Vamiri, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
Before we get to the current time, and of course we want to talk about vaccinations with you as an infectious disease specialist, I wonder if you could walk us quickly through the pandemic as experienced there at Mercy One in Des Moines in the 9 or 10 months. What have been the high points, the low points, the biggest challenges?
Yeah, Ben, it's been quite the challenge. We first heard that something was brewing in Wuhan, China, as early as January, and we were tracking reports of the spread of the virus there. In central Iowa, it came to our front door on a Saturday, March 13th, as I recall, as we had our first case of local transmission documented here in central Iowa. And it's been basically nonstop since then. But even before we got our first patient, we were preparing and working for about a month before on exactly what we would do when we got our first patient. And all of that preparation helped. But as we started to get more and more patients, we obviously had to adjust and change some of our approaches as we gathered more information. We were fortunate enough in that previously when we had Ebola happening during the first epidemic in Western Africa, there were a few patients that made it to the U.S. So we, along with the University of Iowa and some other institutions, got some Ebola training in the mid-teens. And so we were kind of equipped from that regard, and we took some of that teaching and training and applied it to COVID-19 preparations.
Mm-hmm. Bring us up to the present. What does the situation look like there at your hospital, in your community there now? I don't know what they didn't look up the positivity rate right now. Have you leveled off as much of the state has?
Yeah, we are seeing some encouraging signs in some of the metrics, but we are still at what is considered by epidemiologists to be unacceptable levels of community transmission. We went through a very tough November and first part of December where we had just surging number of patients. We kind of hit an inflection point around the third week of October, and we were on a very steep slope for most of November and only started to veer downwards somewhere in the first week of December. And now we never quite leveled off to pre-October levels. We've maintained our census in the 60 to 70 range, but we're nowhere near the 100-plus, 110 range we were in November. Mm-hmm. And one of the key metrics that we look at is the running moving 7-day average per 100,000 population in our county. And that has drifted down to about 40 or 41. Ideally, we'd like to be less than one to be considered contained. But anything above 25 for that metric means we still have uncontrolled community spread. but it's definitely trending in a better direction than earlier.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, Dr. Ravi Vamiri of Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center. He's the Chief Infection Prevention Officer there. Let's talk the final few minutes about vaccination. The last data I see from state and federal officials as of yesterday, about 1.7% of Iowans have received their first shot of coronavirus vaccine. We've been hearing the pace of vaccine deliveries and injections slower than originally projected, but some encouraging signs of that tempo picking up in the state and across the country. Well, what is your view, your snapshot of vaccinations and that rollout right now?
Yes, Ben. The vaccine in arms is the term that people are using. And obviously, we like to get vaccine in arms as quickly and efficiently as possible. And you're absolutely right. We have less than 2% of our population vaccinated so far. Of course, we're still in what's called phase 1A, meaning healthcare workers and nursing home residents. And unfortunately, I think it's been going slower than what many people anticipated. The logistics are very challenging. Most people feel that as a nation, we probably need to be somewhere between 1 and 3 million doses per day, which is a very ambitious goal. Currently, apparently, we've vaccinated about 4.77 million nationwide. And we've had vaccine available for, I think, less than 25 days so now. And so that translates to only about 212 or 13,000 per day. So we have a long ways to go to get to our target metric.
Mm-hmm. A lot of speculation about earlier on, I believe, about attitudes towards getting vaccinated. I wonder if you see encouraging signs there, the public awareness about the safety of these vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer. Is that translating, from what you can tell, into a greater acceptance, a willingness to be vaccinated, doctor?
Yeah. The some of the data that we're getting from other parts of the country is a bit disturbing. But locally, what I can say is the vaccine clinic that we're running for our healthcare workers seems to be pretty busy. We're able to find enough people wanting to take the vaccine to keep our vaccinators busy and occupied. I believe as of this morning, we may have gotten close to 3,200 or so shots in arms. And we're already approaching a second shot for some of our people. For example, myself, I just had my second shot today. So I think when it's all said and done, we'd like to see greater than, obviously, 90% of our healthcare workers get the shot. It's too early to know what percentage have actually taken it yet, because obviously it's the program's still ongoing.
Right. You had your second shot. That tells me, I think that would have been the Pfizer vaccine. You had your first one about 3 weeks ago then. And what level of immunity are you then considered to be at right now?
Yeah. So right now, after the first shot, actually 10 days after, the study showed that people did develop neutralizing antibody. But to really get the full effect of the vaccine, of course, you need the booster. The first shot kind of primes your immune system, and the second shot trains it to be very efficient at recognizing the spike protein and really gives you, hopefully, much longer-lasting capability to produce neutralizing antibodies should I come across this virus naturally as the pandemic goes on. There have been some discussion about possibly going to just one shot or maybe having the dose of the Moderna vaccine, but the FDA shot all of that down pretty nicely yesterday when they said that such effort should only be done in the context of a study, and people should not be altering the way the vaccine is given because both of the vaccines did get emergency use authorization. So the FDA strongly recommends that people adhere to the rules of the authorization.
I wonder, as more and more Iowans, more and more Americans become vaccinated in the coming weeks, you, as a vaccinated person, do you, in terms of social distancing, masking, are you allowed then, once achieving immunity, we assume, does that change your social distancing, your mask behavior, any of that? Should people change that at this point or in the coming months? When do you expect any sort of normalcy?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The very important point to make is, despite getting both shots, I will still continue, and I encourage everyone to still continue all of the measures that we've been commenting upon for the past 10 months, wearing a mask when you're outside of your home, avoiding large gatherings, keeping social distance, washing your hands often. All of those things still need to be practiced, because remember, we need to reach a critical mass of the population with immunity before the pandemic is considered over. In terms of locally, you know, we need to look at the local metrics and see the rate of community transmission go way down, much lower than what it is now, before we can consider it safe to be out and about. And one thing people should remember is, even with two shots of the vaccine, you know, it's 95% efficacy. So what that means is, you know, there's a 5% chance that I could still get infected, obviously. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, even if I do, it will be less harmful to me, but I might still act as a vector and unwittingly transmit it to somebody who's not vaccinated or somebody who's more susceptible. So until you know, public health officials declare that a certain swath of the country, or maybe multiple contiguous counties in Iowa, have reached a level of local transmission that is considered contained infection, much like most of New Zealand and most of Taiwan are currently, you know, until we reach that level of containment, we still need to be practicing all of the things that we've been harping on for the past 11 months or so.
Right. And before we say goodbye to you, Doctor, very quickly, will we, do you expect the U.S. to, or parts of the U.S. at least, the U.S. as a whole perhaps, to reach that level of containment you described, New Zealand, Taiwan, in the U.S. in 2021?
Oh, I sure hope so. But a lot of things have to go right, and the logistics are certainly challenging. And, you know, even if we get the logistics right, then we have to worry about supply. And even if we get logistics and supply right, we have to worry about acceptance and you know, defeating vaccine hesitancy. So there's just a lot of balls up in the air, and everything just has to kind of mesh together.
Okay. Dr. Ravi Vamiri of Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center's Chief Infection Prevention Officer. What a wealth of information you've given us, Dr. Vamiri. Thank you for taking your valuable time to join us today.
Thank you very much, Ben. Thank you for the opportunity to share some information with you.
Very good. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, a survey of four healthcare providers in Iowa, all with different goals, facing different challenges, all connected by this pandemic. We're hearing about their experiences from the past months, what challenges they're facing now at the start of 2021. Joining us now, Caroline Johnson, Clinical Director for the nonprofit Proteus Organization, which serves migrant and seasonal farm workers, immigrants. She's a nurse practitioner based in Des Moines, but travels all over the state. Caroline Johnson, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ben. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. For those who don't know, expand a little bit on what I said about your organization, the mission of Proteus.
Yeah, so our mission is to deliver health care to farm workers and their families. And in Iowa, that includes migrant farm workers as well as seasonal farm workers all over the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so services like what, for instance?
So we are able to go into migrant camps and provide primary care services on site. We also have three brick and mortar clinics throughout the state. We also provide medications and food for our patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, talk a little bit about what you've experienced, because we know these are seasonal workers, the migrant workers working in our ag sector primarily here. How has it been for you at Proteus serving these migrant workers with healthcare needs?
So 2020 has been an exhausting year. We are dealing with patients who are in communal living situations. Many of them have no paid sick leave. They have increased disease burden and numerous health disparities. So all of these weaknesses in our healthcare system have been magnified over the past year and the COVID pandemic. So it has been challenging at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Challenging. We have they move around, move in and out of Iowa. Are these? Tell us more about the people you serve. Their backgrounds. They come to work to Iowa from where? Are some of them undocumented workers?
Yeah. So documentation varies within our patients. Again, we have seasonal workers who are here year-round, who live in Iowa all year, but documentation varies. And then the migrant farmers is the biggest percentage of our patients, and they arrive throughout the summer, many from Texas, some from Mexico, some from Central America, and some from all over the U.S. So they come from a variety of places, but all land here.
Right.
Many of them come together and live in communal living settings. So it was very important to identify positives as soon as they arrived. And our organization was able to help with providing housing for farm workers who did test positive. So we were able to pull them out of those communal living situations and keep everyone safe.
Mm-hmm. So how would you gauge your success in doing that with this special population of people moving in and out of the state?
Well, we just look at the data. And in the beginning of the year, it was pretty challenging. Initially, we weren't separating people who were tested from each other while we were waiting for results. And in those 2 to 3 days, there was disease spread, obviously. So in the beginning of the year, there was much greater disease spread within these populations. But then we changed our strategy a little bit and started isolating workers from each other while they awaited test results in the end of August and into September. And our positivity rate went down and our transmission rate went down as well.
How open is this category of worker to this sort of health care, also considering our overall atmosphere here for immigration and workers from outside? Are they suspicious? Are they open to it more than the general population or less, would you say?
That's a great question. I think that we've seen both sides of that. Amazing thing about Proteus is that we've been around for 40 years. So the farm workers know us. Even before COVID, we were in the camps, seeing them, seeing their babies, caring for their families. And so they trust us. Testing uptake was not great at first, but we were able to provide materials in their native language. We did test demonstrations at all of our testing events. So we are there to build the trust as well. I know that it's going to take a lot of work with vaccination, but the amount of lost wages for this population and the impact on their families, I think will be motivation for vaccination.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you went there because that's what I wanted to ask you about next. We've talked about the challenges to your organization, Proteus, providing these valuable services to farm workers. But with your contact, what would you say has been the biggest challenges for the migrants themselves? Give us an idea of what they're most worried about during this pandemic.
They're worried about being able to support their families. And once they receive the COVID diagnosis, it is not about their own health. They are the last people that they think about. But they are thinking about all of the people that are going to suffer because they are not able to produce income. So that, I think, is at the front of everyone's mind and makes isolation and quarantine so difficult and heartbreaking for these patients.
So it sounds like you have been involved with part of some very difficult conversations with the people you serve?
Absolutely. That's nursing.
Welcome to nursing, and especially during the time of a pandemic, right? It just
maximizes.
Yeah. Okay, we are having the vaccine rolled out. We just heard some details about that a moment ago. I think you heard some of that conversation. What are the challenges you are facing specifically related to this period of mass vaccinations?
So we have some very unique challenges. Of course, we're thinking about the stability of the vaccine and how we are going to store it. We tend to go to the farm workers to provide care, and getting the vaccine there and keeping it cold in order to administer that to farm workers is, of course, going to be very challenging. Another particular challenge with the migrant population is that we don't have a national vaccine registry. So someone who is vaccinated in Texas and then comes to Iowa to work for the summer, we don't have documentation of their vaccine unless they have a piece of paper in their hand. So we don't know if they received Moderna or received the Pfizer vaccine. So we are working with national organizations to develop a registry to help us with that this summer, but that is going to be one of the biggest logistical challenges.
Mm-hmm. We only have a minute or so left. Tell us, how is Proteus funded, and has that funding been adequate during this pandemic?
Yeah, so we are federally funded, and we have received increased funding because of the CARES Act. And because of that, for the first time, we've been able to bring on additional full-time licensed professionals to deliver care. So it has been a silver lining to this pandemic for our organization, and we're doing great.
Okay, that is wonderful to hear in the closing words. So your outlook for 2021, as we begin the first few days of this new year, is rosy? No, you wouldn't go that far, or would you?
I think we all know that we've been unable to predict the future, but I am hopeful for this year.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for this conversation. Caroline Johnson is a clinical director for Proteus, a nonprofit organization. How do people find out more about Proteus, Caroline?
You can find us online, proteusinc.net.
Okay, very good. Caroline, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Take care. Coming up after a short break in the second half of our program, I'll talk with Lindsay Irvine of Senior Life Solutions in Cresco, then Mike Johnston, he's CEO of Decatur County Hospital. As we continue here, our survey of healthcare providers in Iowa, their goals and how they're facing different challenges during this pandemic. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, if you've just joined us, we're asking a number of healthcare workers in the state to reflect on what it's been like for them and for those they look after during this pandemic and what they see in the future. Lindsay Irvine is director of Senior Life Solutions based in Cresco in the northeast part of the state. She's program director there, also nurse for the program. They cover Howard, Winnesheek, and Chickasaw counties. Lindsay Irvine, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, start us off with a few quick words on what Senior Life Solutions is for those who don't know, some of the services you provide.
Sure. So our program is a program for people 65 and older that can come for intensive outpatient therapy is what it's for. They usually come about 3 days a week, depending on the openings that we have, 3 days a week for group therapy, and then they also meet with a therapist individually twice a month. People come to us for a variety of issues. They come for depression, anxiety. We have a lot of people coming for social isolation right now. Many times they'll come for maybe new diagnoses, loss of a spouse or a loved one. Those are the main things that we see people, you know, the 65 and older group for. It's been a different world this year, of course, with COVID. So right now we're providing services via teletherapy. So we have some people that are on Zoom or using Zoom access, and we have some people that are just accessing us through telephonic if they don't have computer access or phone access, iPad, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah, that's kind of how it's working right now. In person, it's a little different scenario. They come, we provide transportation within a 25-mile radius on a normal year, and we also provide them a meal at no cost to them when they come on a normal year. So it's been definitely a change with COVID this year.
Yeah. So go into that a little bit more, Lindsay, there, what you mentioned, because these are in pre-COVID times, you were meeting people in person, face-to-face. They'd come in, and it sounds like very little telehealth. And now you're working 65 and older with seniors who are perhaps less likely to be capable with digital services. Certainly many are, but of course, if we were to pick one demographic group, those least familiar with our digital world would be our oldest citizens. And so what have been the specific challenges there? Have you been able to overcome those challenges to adapt to online healthcare?
Yeah, so it's actually surprisingly been a pleasant experience. Of course, you know, like you said, with the geriatric population, it is always scary to get them involved in new technology and to have them try something new. I would say at a given time, we have a two-track program here in Cresco. So we have basically, it's essentially like having two full groups of people. So we can have 20 patients in a single day, 10 patients in one group and 10 in the other group that participate in the group therapy for the day. And I would say out of the 20 patients that we have in a day, I bet 12 to 15 of them are actually able to get on Zoom and see each other, which is such an awesome experience. I think a lot of them didn't even believe in themselves that they could do it, and it was just taking that initial, way back in March when we first started doing this, it was taking that initial, okay, let's do this step by step with each individual patient, how we're going to get them on, and the more patients we could get on via Zoom so they could actually see each other was huge. We do have the ones that are on by telephone, and they're still participating and actually doing very well. A lot of those patients were patients that have been patients for a long time, so they know the other group members just from meeting in group with them. But we do have patients that have just started that are on the phone too, and it has surprisingly been a good experience. Like I said, we probably have 12 to 15 out of the 20 at a time that are able to get up on Zoom, and it's funny to, their look on their faces when they first got up there was so funny to watch, because it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. And then, see everybody and to wave, and it's been forever since they had seen each other too. So it was really a neat experience.
Wow, a boost to overcome a challenge perhaps they thought they'd never overcome. The technical challenge is what I mean. It sounds like a definite one of the silver linings. Maybe I'll ask you about that a little bit later. But I want to ask you, Lindsay, about what you mentioned, the social isolation. Often, especially for seniors, because seniors are in such a high-risk category during this pandemic, talk about the significant mental health challenges you see the seniors there facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this year more than ever, the mental health crisis is just, if nothing else, it's maybe getting a better knowledge or understanding, because so many more people are reaching out for help, or so many more people are willing to try to get help during the 2020 year that it started in, because of that social isolation that they're having. I mean, the elderly are the highest at risk anyways, and then when you put them amongst a pandemic, it makes it even harder and more of a challenge for them. So I think that has been terribly difficult for them, and a lot more referrals this year with those elderly patients, just because everybody's dealing with that extra stress and added stress of the pandemic going on, and not wanting to get sick, and they're obviously at higher risk of getting sick, so they're all kind of isolating more. It's not been a fun 2020, that's for sure.
No, not by a long shot. How have you been able to address the social isolation when you see this really impacting someone in your community there?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is when they're in this group, they not only are learning techniques and strategies to deal with that social isolation, but they're also, they're in a group of friends that they kind of develop that friendship with the people that they're doing this group therapy with. They talk to people outside a group as well. They exchange phone numbers if that's something they want to do. They, might reach out to one of the other group members to see, just to talk to them in the afternoon when nothing else is going on, and they know that other person has nothing going on. Like I said, they also learn strategies and ways to cope with when they're having feelings of social isolation, which, essentially can lead to depression and anxiety, ways to just deal and strategies to deal with those types of things that are bothering them more so this year due to the social isolation.
Right. Okay. How worried are the seniors you deal with, Lindsay, about how worried are they about contracting COVID-19, especially with the much higher mortality rates for seniors?
Is there,
as in the general population, a spectrum of concern from very anxious to less anxious?
One of the therapists just told me today, I think that, she has one group member that is consistently asking, when is the vaccine going to come out for us? I need to know when the hospital is going to start giving the vaccine to, not essential workers, or people just in the nursing homes, in our area. And, I think they've had more health concerns over the years as too. So they're more at risk to have, higher mortality rates. We have a lot of patients that have had chemo radiation that make them higher risk. Mm-hmm. That if they would contract coronavirus, they could potentially pass away from it. So definitely a more of a scare, I would say, in the elderly population for sure than any other.
Right. And the vaccinations will soon be rolled out for seniors in our state. Is that something that your organization is in any way involved with?
I don't know about, I think it's just coming down. I'm not sure of all the specifics on that, I guess, or when or how it'll be coming, but I know it is coming, and I can't wait for that.
Okay, and most of your seniors that you have contact with are just anxiously waiting, hoping as soon as possible, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see, Lindsay, the ways in which your organization has changed that will stay even after this pandemic?
Yeah, so nothing is for certain, but I've heard a lot of talk or ideas thrown around about, let's say we have a patient that's sick or they don't have a ride or they're out of our 25-mile transportation radius. We've been opened up more to this teletherapy program or even programs that have done hybrid where they have some people in person, some via Zoom or on the telephone, whatever the case may be. And I don't know if that will be something that sticks, in years to come where you can have more people or have more participation by having somebody in their own home and then having some here in person. I think it gives us a great opportunity to offer that experience to more people if it is something that they continue to do in the future.
Mm-hmm. In closing, Lindsay, tell us your outlook for this new year, 2021. What are you hoping for most of all?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm hoping that vaccine will help to, get more of a normalcy in our world. I don't know how much what we quote-unquote consider a normalcy anymore. Mm-hmm. But just to be able to get people out and amongst some friends and family again would be wonderful. I mean, for people's mental health, physical health, everything, I think, has a huge impact on everyone, young, old, everywhere in between, I think would be fantastic for 2021.
Okay, fingers crossed as we head further into this year, 2021. Lindsay Irvine is Director of Senior Life Solutions based in Cresco. Thank you, Lindsay.
Yes, thank you so much for your time.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you've just joined us this hour, checking in with several healthcare professionals across the state to get a sense of their challenges and reflections related to the pandemic in the past year and their outlook as we start a new year. Finally, this hour, let's talk with Mike Johnston, Chief Executive Officer of Decatur County Hospital, Decatur County, south of Des Moines, on Iowa's southern border with Missouri. Mike Johnston, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. We spoke with you early in the pandemic, in early June of last year. Give us a quick overview of how your hospital has experienced the pandemic over the course of 2020, please.
Well, you know, here in Decatur County, we were actually the last county in the state of Iowa to get a positive COVID test or a positive COVID patient. So we were a little bit behind as far as that goes. We certainly saw surges with the rest of the state in October and November. And I think it's been one of those things that we've taken day by day, and at least in 2020, that's about all you could do.
Yeah. And when you had surges, let's say the October/November surge, mm-hmm. did you see your ICUs filling up, come close to filling up?
We had several times here in our hospital where we came very close to capacity. Some of that was COVID patients, of course. You know, in all the news about COVID, everybody forgets about the things in normal life that go on. People still have heart attacks. People still have strokes. Mm-hmm. People have various forms of illness that we still have to deal with. So it was, of course, a balancing act to be able to care for the COVID patients, but also maintain some capacity and service for the non-COVID patients as well.
Right. How has this affected those other patients, non-COVID-related patients, your outpatient care, for instance?
Well, and I think there's been a fairly large effect on that. You know, from the hospital point of view, we've seen our outpatient volumes go down quite a bit. It's a little bit cyclical in the fact that it sort of runs as COVID surges and recedes in certain areas. You sort of see a rise and fall in those volumes. But overall, our outpatient volumes have been down, have been off quite a bit. And what we really see is that people are delaying care because they're afraid to come into the hospital. It's sort of ironic because, you know, you come into a hospital and we take all of the precautions. We follow all the CDC guidelines. We, you know, thorough cleaning. We've added all sorts of equipment to keep people safe. You're far safer at your local hospital than you are going to, you know, a Walmart or a grocery store or something like that, simply because of the precautions we take. But there's still that mental fear or trepidation among folks that coming into the hospital is going to expose them even more so to the coronavirus.
Right. I understand, Mike, that staffing issues have been a big challenge during this pandemic. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, you know, in the early days of corona, when it first hit in the beginning or towards the beginning of 2020, you know, the big concern from everybody was having enough PPE, enough, you know, protective equipment, enough medical equipment to treat patients. We saw shortages of everything. In the intervening months, that's something that has gotten much better. We've been able to access supplies a lot better. But as we've experienced these surges, the problem has shifted to one of a personnel shortage. You know, our healthcare workers, our nurses, our doctors, the people that keep the hospitals running, they aren't immune from COVID, and they are out and about in the community, of course. They're treating patients. They're living their lives. They're exposed or have the potential to be exposed to COVID just like anyone else. In a rural hospital, that becomes an even larger problem, simply because we don't have the depth of staffing that one of your large urban facilities might have. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about critical departments, even outside of that, you know, nursing, doctors, that comes to mind quickly. But when you think about some of the other departments like radiologists or laboratory technicians, you know, some of our hospital departments may only have three or four people capable of performing those functions. And you get one or two of those folks that goes out ill, and it becomes very hard to staff that on a 24-hour-a-day basis. Yeah. So, unfortunately, at least for us, the problem has shifted away from supplies and towards personnel.
How is the morale among personnel after so many months of really, well, ups and downs? You have a rural mm-hmm. hospital, as you mentioned there, so perhaps not quite what the urban hospitals have been experiencing in terms of surges. But still.
Yeah, you know, morale is one of those things that I think ebbs and flows, or we've seen it in that as far as the disease itself or the pandemic itself has progressed. You know, there was a lot of buildup. We very early on, we started to get things together to become prepared, put our plans in place. And then, at least here in Decatur County, there was this long lull, and we didn't see any positive cases. So everybody got all geared up, and then at least in, you know, for the first couple of months, there wasn't that much going on. So then, you know, everybody starts to fall back from that, and then all of a sudden a surge hits, and everybody's got to get geared back up again. And, you know, we obviously don't see the number of patients that you're going to see in the urban environment. But I think, at least in my opinion, it's a little bit harder hit in a rural environment because these doctors, these nurses, they live in these communities. So these patients they're having to treat are their neighbors, their friends. In some cases, they may even be family members. So when you have somebody who comes in who either gets very ill or has, you know, some sort of negative outcome, I think the impact is that much more because these people are close to you and they're people that you identify with. And I think that's been one of the hardest problems of morale to navigate, is people having to deal with that sort of emotion and still be able to function and do their jobs and do what we're here to do, which is take care of people.
Right. If you just joined us, Mike Johnston, Chief Executive Officer of Decatur County Hospital, Decatur County in the south central part of Iowa. A few minutes left to tackle vaccination from your perspective there, Mike. How is your hospital handling the vaccination rollout?
Very well. In fact, we started vaccinations for our staff last week. They are still ongoing into this week, at least as far as the first round of doses are concerned. We got the Moderna vaccine is the one that we've received. So our staff is going through that process. And obviously there's some trepidation among folks because of all the noise and the politics that has surrounded this thing. But we're working through that, trying to get people comfortable with it and get them vaccinated, because I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who didn't believe that this vaccine provides us sort of a light at the end of the tunnel, or we certainly hope it does.
Sure.
For this entire situation.
Can you give me a percentage, Mike, of the percentage of hospital staff you hope to have vaccinated, and perhaps an idea of how many are declining the vaccinations?
At least in the initial rollout, because of some of that trepidation that I mentioned, my hospital has made it voluntary for folks to receive the vaccine. And, you know, when we first started having conversations about the vaccine back in September, when we were starting to get kind of geared up for the rollout, we started putting out surveys to our employees, trying to find out how many would be interested so we could estimate the amount of doses that we needed to ask for from the state. And it was interesting to see, because in the initial hit back in September, as far as the first survey that went out, we had very few, very small percentage, I would say, you know, probably 10 or 15% of our employees that were interested. As time has gone by, though, and as we've gotten now, you know, through December and the vaccinations have started to roll out, that interest level and that willingness to receive the vaccine has grown considerably. And I think by the time this week is over, we'll be somewhere between 40 to 50% of our staff receiving the vaccine. Now, obviously, because of the limited amount of doses, we're prioritizing that to frontline workers, doctors, nurses, EMS, those kind of folks. And then if we can get additional doses, then we're vaccinating the other hospital personnel, business office, housekeeping, administration, those kind of folks. But we really want to make sure we're prioritizing the vaccine for our frontline workers.
We have about a minute left. How do you explain that really dramatic change in attitude to the openness towards receiving vaccinations compared to just a few months ago?
Well, and I think that's hard to explain, but I think like anything else, as time goes by and better and more information comes out, people start to get more educated. We're able to provide them better information. I think they are better able to make an informed decision. And that has led, at least in some part, in my opinion, to the increase in interest, especially as, you know, you see around the country that now I think, you know, several million folks have been vaccinated around the country, and people start to look at that and look at the information that's coming out and see that this vaccine, at least thus far, has proven to be safe. And I think that's gone into a lot of that.
Okay, very good. Mike, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you for letting us check in again with you. Mike Johnston, Chief Executive Officer at Decatur County Hospital. We wish you well in 2021. Do you have a good feeling for the rest of this year?
Yeah, we certainly do. I think there's a lot more optimism right now.
Okay, very good. Mike Johnson, thanks.
All right, thank you, Ben.
That brings to an end this survey of some healthcare providers across the state. Varying perspectives, different goals as we face this pandemic. Tomorrow on the program, climate change, medical costs, taxes. How we'll overcome this coronavirus. The list goes on. So many points of policy pinned to this much-watched election outcome in Georgia. We'll talk about it tomorrow with political scientist Karen Kodrowski of Iowa State University, Megan Goldberg of Cornell College. Their analysis tomorrow on the program. River to River, produced by Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.